Did you hear our dick for the last night's American Idol? You know what this does sound like?
What?
My parents used to have one of those crank-up phonographs on the porch.
Yeah.
You know those big, thick 78 records?
Yeah.
That's what this sounds like.
Well, that's a charming memory.
Well, they gave the thing away.
From your
it's probably worth like
your rural main town.
Hundreds of dollars. They gave it away.
Families, your family sitting out on the porch playing the crank Victrola?
No. The family didn't sit out on the porch. I discovered it on the porch when I was a kid.
Family
just kind of sitting there and with a bunch of these.
Callaway records on the crank Victrola while Moose frolicked on the lawn.
No. It wasn't quite that bad, but.
In rural Maine.
But it did remind me of that.
In bygone days.
Bygone days?
Picture of lemonade?
No. Kool-Aid, maybe. That'd be about it.
Yeah.
We were poor people.
Right.
Yeah, we didn't have money for lemonade.
A beaver roasting on the gas grill?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
You know, you gotta roast what you can roast.
Right.
Hey, I'm a little concerned. Did you see this story?
What's that?
The Army wants their howitzers back?
No, I don't know about this. Tell us.
You don't know about this?
Yeah.
Apparently, the military has asked these ski resorts in Nevada to give back five howitzers because they say they need them to fight in Afghanistan and Iraq. We don't have any reserve howitzers that we could use. We have to go to a ski area to get these back.
Why didn't we lend howitzers to a ski resort?
Well, they're using them for avalanche prevention.
Oh.
You know, shoot these things off, and then they can you know, cause the avalanche to happen when they want it to.
Yeah. Controlled avalanche.
Right. But wouldn't you think that the military would have enough equipment without having to go to a ski area to get them back?
Well, we seem to stretch a little thin.
This blows my mind. I first heard this morning on the fine Ray and
I was at the return of G.I. Joe that I bought in 1967.
Yeah. So well, they may need that, too.
Yeah.
The best I can do to help is I have one of those Bush in the flight suit action figures.
Right.
That's about the best I can do. But well, so they want them back anyway.
They may want our pitchforks and stuff like that eventually, you know, as the weapons run down a little bit. Well, we're
old muskets.
In. What can you say?
God.
Let's talk a little bit about today's show. We will be talking for a good chunk of the 4 to 5 segment. We'll be talking to Mark Ryan. Mark Ryan's the budget director for John Rowland, and so much more. Some people, including Mark Davis, the esteemed journalist, say that Mark Ryan is the de facto governor of Connecticut and the mayor of Waterbury and the budget director. So anyway, all of which may be true. Anyway, we'll talk to him about a variety of subjects.
So the governor was at Adrian's Landing with a hard hat that said the big boss on it?
The big boss? Yeah. Well, he's the big boss for now.
But they didn't have quite enough room to get that on the hat.
That's right. And
if you were him, wouldn't you keep kind of a low profile, or would you not?
Well, yes, I would. And in fact, he kind of does, and he kind of doesn't.
He has to find a cave someplace and stay in it.
I mean, he keeps a high profile when he's got money to hand out. Because that's one of the few ways that they can get people to like him anymore. So, in fact, when there's sort of a bonding opportunity or something like that. Mr. Ambrosio is being a prankster today. He's bringing in funny objects. He's got money to hand out. I mean, I think that he appears among us. But other than that, he's been rather quiet. Anyway, we'll talk to Mark Ryan a little bit later today. Also, I think one of the haircutting guys from the Queer Eye for the Straight Guy fundraiser that you and I are doing, he may be coming in here at the end of the show today to survey our hair. And other than that, you know, my slump, I'm still in a slump. And my slump is spreading. It's metastasizing. I have a worse slump now.
Why?
I don't know. I've been in a writing slump for like about a month.
Yesterday was the day to write.
I haven't written anything good. Well, every day is the day to write, but I haven't written anything good in a long time. And so that's been bothering me. But now I feel like the slump has kind of spilled over into other parts. Like, it may affect this show.
No, I don't think so.
It's affected my day so far today. I didn't get to yoga. I don't feel good.
Why didn't you get to yoga?
Because
there's no
slump.
Excuse for that. That won't work.
I just misplanned the time.
2 days now, the last 2 days, I've just had a really tough time getting my my 3 or 4 miles walking done.
Yeah.
But I still did it.
I don't have your kind of discipline right now because I'm in a slump.
I don't know about discipline, but... Yeah.
I lack the discipline and structure that you show because I'm in a slump. That's all there is to it. I have to fight my way out of the slump.
Well, we have to get you out of the slump somehow.
I may need a sports psychologist or a life coach or a motivation specialist.
I really wish I could help more. I don't know what to say.
Or mind-altering drugs or something.
Well, that may work.
I'm in a bad slump. But it's okay to be in a slump. I had to speak to some young writers today, and I told them it's okay to be in a slump. I said, look at me, I'm in a slump. Do I look worried?
No, you've only mentioned it continually now for 2 days, so apparently you're not worried about it.
But I'm whining.
Well, you're whining because you're concerned about it.
But I told the young writers anyway, I said you will have slumps too, but, you know, you will come out of them.
Mm.
As opposed to me, I will probably not come out of my slump. I'll just die in a slump.
And you said even the great ones have a slump.
Yeah, everybody has slumps. A-Rod has slumps. People just say a slump is not to be fretted about. But even as I say that, I say it with no real conviction. Because the truth is, you never know. This could be, any slump you have could be your last. So,
Do you have a slump-related call? No, I don't know who that is.
That's the kind of thing that happens when you're
a slump. You don't know who it is, or you don't want to know who it is.
Phone rings in the middle of a show, and I didn't sleep well because of my slump. I'm in a sleep slump. I can't even sleep.
You don't sleep very much anyway.
Yeah, but I slept even less.
You know what did it to you? You know why you're like this?
Why am I like this?
You used to be on, you just were so keen all the time.
Yep.
And then you started watching crap television. That's what's done it.
And maybe
crap television.
Well, I'm going to Harper's Stage Company tonight, so that'll help it'll tear me away from the crap television. And actually, last night, I didn't really watch crap television because my son and I went out to dinner, and then we went over to the state capitol to watch real life degenerate into crap. Every once in a while, I like to take Joey over to the state capitol just to sort of let him see the legislative process.
You went to the state capitol and you didn't have to?
Didn't have to, no. But it was like 9 o'clock at night, and I knew that they'd be meeting, you know, late into the night. And, you know, that's. And I think, and actually, Peter Terciak, state representative Peter Terciak, had written then, took Joey off and, brought him out onto the floor of the house and showed him where all the bodies are buried and
walk around
and stuff like that. And took them in the little back rooms and stuff where they make their deals. And so Joey's now seen things at the state capitol that I will never see. But anyway, Peter was very nice to do that. And I was talking to a guy up there. This is sort of an interesting thing. I'm not going to say who this was, but this is sort of an old-time guy, a guy who was up there doing stuff at the state legislature like when I was up there in the late 70s, early 80s. And we started talking about the Roland situation and not saying anything particularly interesting to one another, except that what this guy then said is, he said, you know what the worst thing is that they've done? He said, what's worse than anything else? He said, and they don't even know they did it. They don't even understand that it's bad. He said, this Specialski thing. He said, that's worse. That's worse than anything else they've done. His point being that everything else is pretty much about money. Whereas the Specialski thing, if you are of the school of thought that says that this case is a creature of, at least not a creature of the Roland administration, but, you know, influenced, heavily influenced by the Roland administration, a case that was basically dead and was reopened as a result of tinkering by the Roland administration, if you believe that, then you believe that Heather Specialski is looking at, you know, potentially 25 years in prison, despite the fact that, you know, there's at least the school of thought that she's the victim of the crime. That's what this guy was saying. He said, look, you know, that girl was the victim of this whole thing. Not the crime, but the victim in this whole situation. And she's looking at a 25-year prison sentence because of meddling that the Roland administration did. And that was an interesting point that, I mean, I remain transfixed by the Specialski case. Anyway, well, we can talk more about that. And I can tell you why I think, actually, he has a point. Anyway, there's Jim in his car. Jim, any some advice about the slump?
Jim?
I hear a slump. Tom, yeah. And I hear you're in quite a slump.
Yes.
That is horrible. I'm very sad to hear that. But I was talking to your producer, and I suggested you should track more of that Cab Calloway. That sounded like late 30s, early 1940s, when Dizzy Gillespie was playing horn with him.
Yeah.
And that would get anybody out of a slump. Or Minnie the Moocher.
I'm beyond the help of music. I hate to
that
say,
may take him out of a slump, but it'll put me into one.
Yeah.
Oh, bummer. Then we got to find something to play for you to get into out of a slump with.
Yeah, we'll just sort of keep constantly applying music to one another. You know, I think my slump is beyond the reach of music. And I don't know what will happen.
It's close to the time of turning Roland into the object of an investigation. That would get anybody out of a slump, too.
All right, well, thanks for your call. I think that's already happened, actually. But thanks for your call.
Yep.
No, I think actually the only thing you can do with a slump is ride it down all the way.
You mean this is going to get worse?
Well, maybe I'm going to hit bottom today. I don't know. But you ride it down all the way. And
I don't see, I have no evidence or would I tend to think that you were in a slump, except for the fact that you keep bringing it up every 15 minutes and just reminding me and everybody else that you're in a slump. I see no slump here.
It helps me to talk about
the writing thing might be. I don't know. See, I can't judge.
Because
I haven't read any of the stuff.
It's overspreading my life at this point.
The rest of your life, I don't know.
Everything is in a slump. Well, let me just say this about the Spasiewski case, all right? I mean, I was noticing this today, and there are two ways to look at this, as there are about anything, but they had testimony from Deborah Messina. She's a forensic scientist who said she was told to rush her analysis of paint scrapings investigators took from the Mercedes. This, I mean, I'm assuming everybody knows what this case is. This is a young woman who got into a car with her boyfriend. It has not really been determined for certain which one of them was driving. They were both drunk. There was a terrible crash. The boyfriend, Neil Esposito, died. She lived. She had terrible chronic injuries. She eventually wound up, the initial state police investigation indicated that he was driving. She sued the estate, the Esposito estate. At which point, they tried to get the case reopened and have a reinvestigation of the possibility that she was driving. They went to the governor's office. They are political donors. And the governor's office did intervene. Joe McKenzie, who's sort of, you know, factotum, made some kind of call to Henry Lee. But so anyway, they had testimony from this forensic scientist, Deborah Messina. She said that she was told to rush her analysis of paint scrapings that investigators took from the Mercedes. Messina said that State Trooper Eric Daigle told her the governor's office had been, quote, in contact with, unquote, the public safety commissioner's office about the Esposito case. Her account disputed earlier testimony from Daigle, who said on the witness stand that he had no recollection of telling Messina that he needed a rush on the examination of the scrapings. But anyway, I mean, one way to look at this is anytime the governor's office gets involved, anytime they make a call about something to indicate that it's on their radar screen, then it just stays that way in the bureaucracy. I mean, everybody just sort of looks at the case a different way. And that's not necessarily meddling. That's just basically what governor's offices do sometimes for constituents, people who have a little bit more access than other people. That's very normal. And that there's nothing really kind of unseemly even about the idea of a police investigator being told to rush a certain kind of analysis because the governor's office is interested in this case. And the other way to look at it is that this really was a case where normal procedures were kind of stood on their heads, and that, you know, you almost get the sense that people are going after some kind of a result here, and that this is, you know, that there's something very creepy about the way the governor's office is involved in this case. And I don't know which one of those things is true, but this is this case, it's very haunting. I mean, it started out being about this very sort of tawdry case in which part of her defense was going to be that she was performing a sexual act on this guy while he was driving. And that put it on the national radar screen. Even Hideous Fathead Rush was talking about it. But I think it's a different kind of case than that. I think it's a much weirder and more sinister case than that.
These days, there's one question on everyone's mind. Which Colin shall return?
All right, listen, we're going to take a few phone calls here. Our boss, Steve Salahini, a radio programming genius, said,
put lots of calls on the air. Don't talk to them very long, okay? Just say hello and then drop the line.
So we won't let you talk very much, but we will let you talk on the air. Those are our orders. We'll start with Tim from Granby.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Colin.
Oh, you're done. Thank you.
Sorry. All right.
Bye, Steve.
Pretty good thing that happens when you're in a sport, right? This is a typical thing. Although I think I've covered this one pretty well, but this is the kind of problem. Okay, today I had to give this speech, and I was coming here, and I was kind of hoping maybe I could sneak in a little bit of exercise. And I'm going to the Hartford Stage Company tonight, and I realized that I would need a multitude of different outfits, basically, for all those different things.
Right.
So I got in the car and I had like several different kinds of clothes with me and several different kinds of shoes, but as I was running to the car to get over to Texas Community College in time for my speech there, I just put on my stinky my, the stinkiest shoes that I own, because they're slip-ons, you know, they're Merrell slip-ons, and you can get them on really fast. But they happen to be like these really irreparably stinky shoes. Like, they just got stinky one day, and I can't ever get them to not be stinky.
Yep.
And I put Gold Bond powder in them, and I put stuff in them, and they reach the stinkiness point of no return.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know how this happened. Feel
bad
about
it. It just does.
Them. Yeah. Nadine is here. I knew that I had other shoes with me. But then I got to Texas Community College, and I was in such a rush that I forgot that I had my irreverently stinky shoes still on. And rather than reach into the back seat and get one of the other pairs of shoes that I had with me, I just went in there with my stinky shoes on. Well, then I came back here, and I realized that I didn't want to come in here with my stinky shoes on, so I took them off.
Why?
Because I just didn't want
Nobody cares here.
Well, no, but it's
you know
really stinky. And I was thinking about you. You have to sit in a closed room with me for 3 hours. And so I took them off. But then I realized I didn't want them sitting in my car, stinking out my car. So I put them next to my car. But sort of facing the door so that there was like an invisible man.
Next to the car?
Yeah. Because I didn't want them in my car. All locked up in my car. My stinky shoes. That's not a good idea.
No, that would have been really putrid at the time.
But I didn't want to forget them either, so I left them right where I would be getting
probably
into the
car. Probably they walked off by themselves.
So now what happens is everybody keeps coming up to me going, you know, there's a pair of shoes next to your car. So now what I've done is I keep going out there and I move them around. Like right now they're on the windshield, like somebody's walking up the windshield.
That's
or something.
Good. Yeah,
so I've turned them into performance art. It's
that's
like
a good idea.
Invisible man walking around my car piece that I've done right now.
It is true, though, isn't it? It's amazing how people notice little stupid things like that.
Your shoes on your car, man. Should we talk to Nadine?
I think so.
Okay.
Only if it's a positive call, however.
I'm sure it is.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Hi, Nadine.
I heard you're in a slump, Colin. So I'm calling to cheer you up.
Okay, and how do you propose to do that?
Well, this is what I do to cheer myself up.
Okay.
A few things.
Right.
The first is I pull out my Bill Curry scrapbooks and go through them.
And that cheers you up?
That cheers her up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's always work.
Right.
But if that's not enough, you can go out and buy some new makeup.
Okay.
That's always a big pick me up.
Right.
And
I think some blush might be good.
Erno Laszlo doesn't even make the stuff I like anymore.
And you can listen to a good joke. I have a good joke for you.
Okay, well, go ahead. Can she tell it? Do we have time?
Yeah,
okay. You do.
Okay, we do. Okay.
So, John Kerry walks into a bar.
Yeah.
And the bartender turns around and says, why the long face?
Okay, that's pretty good.
So, here you go.
You're such a tonic.
No, I'm depressed.
Now, don't be depressed, Bruce.
All right.
I have another joke, and I'll let you go.
Okay.
And I hope I cheered you up.
All right.
What were the best 5 years of George W. Bush's life?
Third grade.
Oh, God, you heard that one already.
Yeah, okay.
Well, chin up, Colin.
Okay, thanks, Nadine.
Things will get better.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See, that probably would have been better if you had let her tell you that.
Yeah. It was a girl like that on my student council, actually.
Ruined her whole afternoon.
Okay.
Bye. Jumping in there with that.
Sorry about that.
Well, I to apologize to me.
I think I'm going to go move the shoes around in my car during the break here.
Where are you going to put them next?
I don't know.
On the roof rack.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
We have this whole extra minute here, too?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we come back, another thing I'd like to talk about is this ABC adoption thing. Except that, you know what? I think it's much ado about nothing. I think this is a tempest in a teapot. I don't actually... I think this is just a promo... The promos that they were running were stupid. But I don't believe for a second that there's actually a reality show about
Raffle the Baby next week.
Yeah, they're not going to do that. I mean, it's some idiot in promotions. And certainly the term idiot in promotions is something
that we've heard before.
Those who are here at the Off-World Carney would be completely familiar with that concept anyway.
Let's try that again.
Idiot in promotions. Really, I don't even have to complete the sentence for those of us who work out here. I'm all done. That's what happened. Idiot in promotions. I feel slightly better. It's
that Harold Faltermeyer thing. That's what it is. Isn't that what this is?
Is that what this is?
The Axel F theme. Yeah, from Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because isn't it, it's Herbie Hancock, it's called Rocket. Isn't this Rocket?
No.
It may be both things.
How can it be both things?
I don't know.
That's what I thought it was the Axel F theme from Beverly Hills Cop. Harold Faltermeyer, right? Yeah.
But what it is. Joining us now is an Axel in his own right, ladies and gentlemen. Revered state politician and thinker and spiritual leader, Bill Curry.
Wow.
Wow. Not only is that the nicest introduction you've ever given me, it's the first positive introduction that I've ever had.
Would you like us to start over again?
I know it's on tape. I can retrieve it from Bobby. Yeah. And it's fabulous. I just want to say, I was feeling a little down in the dumps, and Nadine completely cured me.
Yeah.
And I know that was kind of inadvertent, but I went and just got out my own Bill Curry scrapbook, which, as you know, now occupies two full rooms of my house.
You are your own Bill
and
Curry scrapbook.
Just, I think she's right. I think it works. And, you want to come over here and borrow one or two boxes, feel free.
That'll be the name of your one-man off-Broadway show. I am my own scrapbook.
Yeah. Anyone's, really. not to get too metaphysical. But... the question I have, though, for you, mm-hmm. I mean, I was really struck listening to the last segment of the show. Where was I the day you went from silent, repressed, stoic, black Irish, out of whom you couldn't pry a feeling with a crowbar, to this, like, completely unedited, new-age gusher of emotions? Just, reporting on feelings most people have never heard of, let alone experienced. I mean, what is this?
In your
Who are you?
In your off-air phone call, you used the term gas bag.
I did. I thought that was harsh. And, hearing the tone in your voice, I try to make it a little more positive.
So you try to save your more cutting remarks for... off the air, out of the public eye.
No, I'm saying I regretted that. I'm saying realizing that you were down there in this cry, this cry for help from your broadcast studio to, let's face it, a cold and indifferent public, that to come in with a line like that was thoughtless.
Yeah. Well, I feel better. But, one thing that has been troubling me a little bit that has contributed to my slump is that, I'm writing all the time, and lately you've been writing all the time, and I have the sense that you're writing better than I am, and that's upsetting me.
Well, that's just a suspicion you have.
Yeah, it's a suspicion.
But there's that. Because knowing that that's an anxiety for you, both improves my mood and probably improves the quality of my writing.
Yeah.
Gives me a certain confidence.
Well, it is.
By the way, sorry, go ahead.
Well, when you're not writing very well, you can't stand for anybody else to be writing well.
That is true.
So what are you suggesting, Mr. Curry? Should perhaps stop writing?
Well, no, I don't even know whether he's writing well or not. I just have this sense over there. It's like the Taoist hum, I'm sort of dimly aware as sort of a background radiation of the sense that I have that he's writing better, because he's not calling me as much, and there's a little bit, you can just feel whether somebody's got the action going.
Do you have a sense of cockiness in his voice?
Listen to him now. You can tell.
I didn't want to bring this up, but actually, I keep a scrapbook of your writing. Just when I'm feeling down, I'm staring at a blank screen, I'm getting nowhere, and I'm feeling stupid, I take out something you wrote, and then I think, anybody can do this. Suddenly I'm tapping away like the typewriter song.
This is so not a helpful phone call.
It's, by the way, I have one last question, which is feeling badly, which you apparently have been going on now for like a few days.
Yeah.
I should monitor you more closely than I have been. But feeling badly, can you share with me and perhaps with your audience what thought process made you decide to go visit the legislature? was that part of a conscious plan for pulling yourself up by the bootstraps?
Well, feeling anyway...
Or did it even occur to you that might leave you feeling worse?
I think I was sort of feeling that since my crisis has to do with artistry and imagination, I should visit people who are even more benighted, who on a regular basis...
Well, once again, you dazzle me. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Wow. You're always two steps ahead.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and that's what I feel about. That's why, I have to write, because it's just slower.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's brilliant.
Well, go off and do some good writing, Mr. Smarty Pants, all right?
Well, just let me tell you, this has been really helpful.
Okay.
All right,
a
bye.
A curse. I give a curse on you. And that was Bill Curry. And it really is true that if you're not writing well, you hate anybody. Like, yesterday, my friend Maud made a point of showing me this terrific piece that she was enjoying so much that was Laugh Out Loud Funny by Chris Buckley in The New Yorker. And so I started reading it, and it was funny. But I said, why are you showing? I mean, I can't write right now. I can't. Why would you show me this? I hate Chris Buckley now. I hope he chokes it out on his own spit.
Well, that seems just a shade harsh.
Well, he's writing well, and I'm not.
Oh, geez.
I don't want to see. Show me some bad writing. That'll make me feel better. Show me John Updike, and he can't write a grocery list. That would make me feel better. Show me Ann Tyler, you know, and she can't write a freaking ransom note. That would make me feel good. But don't show me Chris Buckley writing something really funny.
So basically, if we were to compile a bunch of things that were poorly written, that might snap you out of this funk?
We might have a product there. We might have a product that's saleable for other people who are in writing slumps. A compendium of really crappy writing by acclaimed writers.
Right.
To say, you know, you think you're writing bad? Look at what Norman Mailer wrote on October 22nd, 1981.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
And really, we could sell that at writers' conferences and, like, at Breadloaf and stuff like that. Everybody would want a copy.
I would think.
Yeah. And, you know, we could call it, You Think You Suck.
An excellent title.
You Think You Suck. An anthology of worst writing.
See, now you're feeling better already.
I'm feeling very good. I'm feeling this is a commercial product. If my agent would return my phone calls, I would call her up right now and mention this.
Yeah.
But she won't return my phone calls because I'm in a slump. You see?
Yeah, but you might not be in a slump very much longer. I have a feeling I can sense you're coming out of
it. I'm coming out of it, but it might be a while before there's the perception out there, among others, like my agent, for example, that I'm... You know, in other words, there might be a lingering stink of slump about me.
Mm. You moved the shoes?
I did move my stinky shoes.
Yeah.
They're on the bumper now.
On the bumper?
Yeah.
That was since then. Has anybody come in to mention that to you?
No, but I did get a call from Krista, who says, I'm totally on the right track, you know, that I should wrap the car in toilet paper next. But in terms of performance art, in terms of concept, you know, Helmecki and I were talking about this. When was the last time?
No wonder you're in a slump.
When was the last time Christo?
Look at the people, the morons you talk to.
When was the last time Christo wrapped
anything?
You talk
to Phil Haney today, too?
When was the last time you heard about Christo? Talk about being in a slump. I've been in a slump for, like, maybe 3 weeks. But when was the last time Christo, you ever even heard about Christo? When was the last time he wrapped anything? Or, I don't know what else. What else did he ever do besides wrap things?
Nothing that I know.
Probably. So, you know, but when, is he dead?
I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Where is
certainly hasn't been in the news lately.
No. I mean, he used to, like, rap, like, Long Island and stuff like that. Yeah. He's rapped nothing. He probably hasn't wrapped a birthday present. That's what happens when you're in a slump.
That's right.
If you're Christo, one moment you're rapping Long Island, the next minute you can't wrap an action figure for your nephew's birthday.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I'm done. We do have Mark Ryan, the state budget director, although if he's listening to any of the show...
Oh, yeah, he's going to be just chomping on the bit to get involved with this.
And then, you know, in terms of this adoption thing on ABC, you want to try to explain this, or should I set it up?
Go ahead. It's part of this, The View, right?
It's John Stossel and Barbara Walters. I don't think it's The View.
Oh, it's not The View?
It's the evening thing.
Oh, it's the evening thing.
Yeah. And,
I have it here.
It's 2020.
To dig it up.
2020. That's what it is. It's a thing of 2020.
I thought it was the midday.
It's an hour-long special about open adoption. And I guess they had these promotions that made it look like sort of a Let's Compete for a Baby reality show. It's a special edition of 2020 called Be My Baby. And it does follow, I think, five different couples who are all trying to adopt the same baby. And follows the decision-making process by the 16-year-old mother as she selects among these five couples. But I think it's just sort of a straight news reported documentary of it. But because everything is flash and sizzle and slime these days, I think the promotions people at ABC thought, well, the more we make this look like a reality show, the more that the people who watch reality shows but don't watch news shows are likely to watch this show. So that's what they did. Now, I should say, Barbara Walters herself has one kid, and it's she's an adoptive mother. The only kid she has is an adopted kid. And so I would assume that Barbara Walters takes adoption, you know, pretty seriously.
I would certainly hope so.
And I don't think, I mean, I've done some more reading about this. Bill Carter has a piece in the New York Times today, and there was a piece in the New York Post that you're hunting for right now. And I mean, there's been some coverage of this, and it's pretty clear reading from it. They've done their standard 2020 kind of news show. It's not a reality show. It's not, you know, it's not like that. It may, because one of the reasons they call them reality shows is that this, to a certain degree, they probably do mirror actual reality. But I think that they're taking a real pounding on this thing because it's fun to pound on them about it. And you can see how the networks are so depraved these days that they almost might do something like that. But I think it's just sort of an example of really bad promotion that came back to bite them. And I guess they've softened the promos now and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, I'm not suggesting that John Stossel and Barbara Walters are, you know, pillars of Western civilization, because they're clearly not. But I don't think that, you know, they're not that bad. They're not that depraved.
Well, it'd be pretty stupid if they were.
Yeah, they'd have
to be. I mean, that would be out of... Right over, completely out of
But meanwhile, everybody's getting their knickers in a twist, and, like, there's all these websites and, you know, stupid talk radio shows where they take the stupidest ideas in the world and run with them as if they were real and stuff. And so it's been this huge tempest, and I think it's about nothing.
Eastbound 84 commuter. Talk to 80.
What is Bob Cox, the Clint Eastwood of weather forecast, you're saying this for?
You better ask yourself the following question. Mr. Storm. Mr. Surface Storm. You can ask me a
This is Bob Cox. We're going to be looking at a sunny sky through the rest of the afternoon. Breezy conditions continuing. Temperatures holding in the 50s. Clouds will tend to increase tonight, lows between 36 and 44 degrees. We may have some early morning clouds Thursday. However, it's going to become partly to mostly sunny and warm during the day.
Liberty Mutual. It's more than insurance. It's insurance in action.
Bruce and Colin shall return.
The problem with Blumenthal is you can't tell when he's running because he always acts like he's running in the sense that there isn't a lousy, stinking cheese ball, spaghetti dinner, rubber chicken thing from here to Seymour that he won't go to. He goes to all of them. All of them. And he goes to everything. And so either he's made his decision to run for governor and he's happy with it. And that means he's looked at the numbers and he's realized that there's no Republican who can run against him with any plausibility.
Unless, of course, Roland decides to run again.
Yeah, and they don't let you run where you can only talk on the telephone through the plexiglass. It's hard to do that anyway. Like, you know, for the debates... If Blumenthal has to sit on one side of the plexiglass with a telephone and then Roland has to be on the other side, I don't know, it's compromising. I think one of the candidates comes out looking not as well.
With the healthy changes of...
The new Diane Krall. I'm not a big Diane Krall fan, actually, but, you know, she's got this new one where she sings one of her new husband Elvis's songs. She sings Mose Allison and stuff like that. I might be interested in hearing that.
Boy, I just wanted to get my car and go get a bag of that dog food. I just eat for myself.
I beg your pardon?
That dog food that was dog food that was just on.
Well, ask Chester if he'll share with you.
Wasn't planning on sharing with a dog. It just sounded pretty tempting to me.
Was some kind of Dick Morris fantasy where, like, Diane makes you eat dog food or something like that? Is that what you're saying?
I really don't think we need to be starting that now, do we?
I didn't understand what your point was. Part of the problem was Bobby was talking in my headphones when you first started talking about this. But my understanding is you want Diane to give you dog
food. No. I was just...
Would you be down on all fours and she'd be standing up?
No. Here's what I meant.
Yeah.
The pitch on that was so good.
Yeah.
It was so convincing
that
not only would I feed that to my dog, I would also probably even think about eating it myself.
Yeah, because of the way Diane
made it sound. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm right.
No, you're not right.
It's a Dick Morris kind of thing.
No, it's not a Dick Morris kind of thing. It's nothing more than it just sounded like a good thing.
Right.
It sounded like a very positive thing. And
afterwards, would you want Diane to go out and, like, throw a tennis ball for you or something like that? Or
I could think of a couple of places I'd like to have Diane throw a tennis ball, but it would have nothing to do with me.
Okay, just asking.
And it would bring you out of your slump real fast.
All right, I'm already out of my slump. I'm fine. Our numbers, by the way, are, you don't have a lot of time to call us, but it's 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, star WTIC, and we plan to talk to Mark Ryan, the budget director of Connecticut, who's smart as a whip. You know what he's thinking? He's thinking, he's listening to us, and he's thinking, I could run rings around these two yokels. And he's probably right, too. But we're going to talk about the budget and other stuff as well. And
well, that would be
true. The state of the state. This is the highest-ranking role in an administration official who would ever come on this show. I think that's fair to say.
Absolutely.
I think this is the outranks Roland, as far as I can tell, at least in terms of, you know, workload and stuff like that. But certainly the governor would not come on. Now, I don't know.
Which is really surprising.
No, yes. But Judy used to come on the show. I don't know if she would come on now.
She did used to come on the show. She's very nice. She's a nice lady.
She's a nice person.
I enjoyed talking about
her. But I don't know if you could call her a high-ranking official, since she basically does nothing.
That's one way to spur her interest to come back on the show.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, the lieutenant governor, they don't do anything. I mean, there's really nothing for them to do.
She may be doing a lot.
It isn't worth a bucket of warm spit. But yes, it is true that she may be the governor at some point.
Right.
And that's a whole different thing. That's like going from 0 to 60. You know,
in 4 seconds.
Right. I mean, basically, you know, right now she's like, you know, she's like Arnold out there playing solitaire or something on the computer or something. Trying to pass the time, marking time until death, as we say.
Yeah.
But she could go from that to being the governor. Now, if she steps into the gubernatorial shoes after the fashion of John Rowland, she'll still be doing very little, and Mark Ryan will still be doing a lot.
Now, I was under the impression, apparently I was wrong, that Mr. Ryan had procured another place of employment.
No, he's being looked at by St. Francis Hospital.
Oh, okay. So there's nothing definite there yet.
Well, no, he's definitely been accepted by St. Francis Hospital. The question is, as CEO or patient? They're just sort of figuring, they're just sorting that whole question out.
So would this be perhaps some sort of audition that he might be going through here today by coming on?
If he can survive this, what else is there, really, when you think about it? I don't really know. I don't know what possible motivation he can have for coming on our debased show. Was this about Christo? Does he know something about Christo? Does he know? Well, we're out of time. It doesn't matter if he knows anything about
Christo. That's an interesting way of... We have an extra minute.
Let's put Carl in the air.
Carl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Colin, you said you hadn't heard from Christo, but for a guy who used to read the New York Times, I'm surprised. He finally got permission to put a big thing in Central Park.
Oh, he is? He's doing the Central Park thing?
Yeah. The whole time Stern was commissioner, he couldn't do it. Now he's going to do it. And I think you're spending too much time on BowieNet and not enough time reading the Times.
It's very possible. I usually read the Times pretty carefully. I must have just blanked out on it. On this whole Christo thing. So he's going to wrap all of Central Park?
Yeah, I guess. No, I'm a little shy on the details.
Yeah. Well, I've pulled up his website, and it says Major New Exhibition, Metropolitan Museum of Art. Well, anyway, we'll find out. Well, I will find out about this. But
I'm going to look forward to it. Yeah.
All right. Seems like this feels like a step down somehow.
Yeah, we have a little more time now. I just found out.
Hasn't he wrapped even bigger things than that?
Apparently, we're having some problems with the traffic thing.
With the traffic
thing? We have another minute.
We can't reach the traffic people?
Well, I don't know what the story is.
Yeah.
Something.
Well,
we're working on it.
Yeah.
As we speak. I'm sure it's something very precious. Well,
further raising questions about their attitude about race, the American Idol voters named Tom Gugliotta the greatest NBA player of the last 5 years.
Wally Zerbiak second.
It's time for Sport de Trois, the very French sports discussion segment. Vic Mizzou and Brazil.
And Chris Mim third.
Mizzou, Brazil, Vince and myself. Louis Gascon de la Mer.
You have just gone reality show on us.
Yeah, good advertising opportunity for anybody who sells either glue or hamburgers. But... all right, we have to ask
yes,
Mr. Ambrosio.
He's anxious to ask.
Dear Mr. Ambrosio, help me out here. The other night, while trying to light a fire in the backyard.
You've been in a fire lately.
Yeah, my aunt claimed that the hottest part of the flame was the blue part closest to the middle. I corrected her, saying that I know the tip of the flame is the hottest.
Yes.
The closer the flame is to white, the hotter it is.
Yeah.
Please settle this argument.
Always been. Closer it is to white, the hotter it's been. The tip of the flame. Now, if you get a blue tip...
Yeah.
That's the hottest of possibility, and you should avoid that at all costs. But the white tip of the flame is always the hottest. We did a lot of experimenting on this at the Institute, and unfortunately, we had a few accidents, which resulted in charbroiled steaks and charbroiled human beings from time to time. But the white tip of the flame is about 64% hotter than the middle of the flame. See, so the thing to remember here is when you're charcoaling at home, the outer portions of the grill give you the greatest result and the fastest cooking. Middle for slow cook, outside for warm cook. That not only applies to the grill, but many life situations as well.
All right, we're back and visiting us because Bruce and I are participating in this Queer Eye for the Straight Guy makeover on May 6th at the Pond House to raise money for Connecticut AIDS Residents Coalition. And so visiting us right now in studio is Paul Mataruzzo from New Millennium Salon in Bishop's Corner. And you're actually going to be, are you going to cut my hair or style my hair? What are you going to do on Thursday night?
Both.
Both, yeah. Both. Pull the microphone a little closer to your mouth so we don't miss any of this. And so I thought it might be a good idea for you to take a look at my hair. And I mean, what are your initial reactions? Don't be afraid to hurt my feelings.
Well, it's on the long side, and could use some styling and a little bit of updating. The beard also could stand some trimming.
Off the air, he was saying some fairly alarming things about my beard,
like it's got to go.
Well, no, I didn't say it had to go. Come on.
But it look kind of ratty and raggedy?
It looks a little bit ratty. Yeah. See around the bottom, it looks a little ratty.
I mean, in terms of the overall...
That'll help your slump.
Do you think I need a new look to my hair? Does my hair, need to, flow in a different direction from where it's going?